Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I think conspiracies are fun in movies. I don't think they're fun in real life.
In real life.
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
There are still loose ends, witnesses. The girl, I've decided to terminate her. Terminate her. Terminate her.
All right. Hello, everybody. Hey. This is Recotopia, episode 24. Today's episode is going to focus on Brian De Palma's Blowout. I'm Chris Atkinson.
And I'm Jeremy Scott.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And once again, we will acknowledge the chat, the people from Patreon, the fine people from Patreon who are coming on to watch us live. Thank you for coming on. We appreciate it. Hope that a lot of you saw this movie and enjoyed it. So, how are you doing? How are you doing today?
Yeah, everybody. How's your mom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh man. I'm personally doing great. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to talk about my small recommends. I'm very excited.
You should go ahead and get into one of your small recommends, because everybody in the chat must have seen you do the Twitch stream on this. So go ahead. Go for it.
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
All right, so my first small recommend this week is the video game Stray, which many in our live chat right now were around Sunday evening when I did about an hour of Twitch streaming of this game. This is a game where you play as a cat, which is, I'm surprised it took this long for a game like this, considering how many cat people there are in the world. Yeah, for those of you who did not get to watch me, I'll tell you a little bit about this game. I adore this game. They open you up in this kind of culvert thing where you're hiding from the rain with like three other cats. And there's a little triangle interaction button on each of the cats. And you walk up to them and hit the button to see what happens. And they like start licking you or start playfully batting at you. And then like 3 minutes later, it tells you to curl up and take a nap, and it fades to black. And that's like the best opening of a video game I've ever played in my life. I played for nearly an hour, and I still haven't gotten to anything story-related or task-related. I've read about the game, so I know at some point I'm going to meet a robot friend. And at some point, there's going to be some tasks where robots will ask me to go do something for them. You played this game at my house a week ago.
I did.
For a good hour or more.
Yeah, I played it for quite some time. And I went through probably three or four different puzzles on that. And I did get to the robot friend. It expands the gameplay quite a bit, where you can start reading signs and you can start interacting with things, and you have a light on you now and all that. I really had a lot of fun with it. I'm going to have to get this game myself if I ever have time to play a game like this ever again. But I highly, highly enjoyed it. So, yeah, a lot of fun.
It's available now on PS4 and PS5 as a digital download game. I guess in September they're going to release it on a disc. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that rollout strategy at all. But and you can also get it on Steam, or it basically is available for Windows as well as PS4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's well worth it. I think it's $29 on all those platforms. And most video games these days are like $50 or $60.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Chris has made it further in the game on my own console than I have, but it's pretty straightforward. Walk around as a cat. There's a dedicated meow button. Anytime you want to meow, you just hit that circle, and the cat goes, meow. Mm-hmm. If you meow at the security cameras nod at you. Like, mm-hmm. they're like, yeah, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's just freaking delightful. If you're a cat person and you play video games, you have to check this game out.
Yeah.
Straight.
Yeah, absolutely. So recently Criterion came out with, I'm doing a lot of these Criterions, and it's just because a lot of these have just recently come to my doorstep lately. So Criterion recently did a 4K transfer of Devil in a Blue Dress, Carl Franklin's movie that came out in, I believe, 1996, was it? No, 95, came out in 95. This stars Denzel Washington as a guy who, he's just come out of World War II. He is looking for work. He's got a house that he needs to pay for. He's having a hard time finding work. He asks a local bartender if he knows anybody, and Tom Sizemore comes in. Now, if you've seen any movie in the 90s with Tom Sizemore in it, you know that guy's probably not playing a good guy. But Sizemore has a job for him. He needs Denzel Washington to find this woman for this politician who is running for re-election, and he needs Denzel to find her in this club because it's a black club and white people don't mix well in black clubs. And so he goes to this club, starts asking questions. People don't seem to really know what he's talking about, or at least pretend not to know what he's talking about. And finally he runs into someone who does know, and she's married to one of his friends, and he and his friend and this guy's wife go back to their house. The husband is passed out drunk, and the wife really wants to get on Denzel, like really mm-hmm. wants to get on Denzel. Mm-mm. And she even tells him at one point, you're hitting my spot. And he goes, I went on hitting her spot till the morning and all this stuff. he gets a kind of a lead of where this woman is, played by Jennifer Beals, Yeah, I think it's what he finds a lead there. He leaves, and he finds out later that the woman that he just had sex with got killed right after he left. So he's under suspicion for all this stuff. This is one of those twisty, turny, lot of things going on in this type of movies that I don't want to spoil for you if you've never seen it. This has Don Cheadle, before a lot of people knew who Don Cheadle was, playing Denzel Washington's friends, one of Denzel Washington's friends in this movie. It's just really, really well made. It's a movie that kind of came and went in 1995 and wasn't, just didn't gain any traction. But apparently Criterion noticed, and they said, hey, let's make a whole special disc for this. And this is a really, really well-made mystery movie, and you can't go wrong with Denzel Washington.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So, never.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also would like Denzel Washington. No, I'm not going to finish that sentence.
to hit
your
spot?
I've seen this movie, but that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, good.
I remember it being great. I haven't seen it in a long time, so I have to add that to the rewatch pile.
Mm-hmm.
Denzel is always, always good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
My second recommend, and I'm, again, staying away from movie recommends this week, with both of my small recommends, I'm going to recommend making your own tomato sauce. I'm going to tell you exactly how I did it.
Look how Aaron has come up with tomato sauce as the image live show. There it is. There it is with the tomatoes in the background and everything.
It's perfect. It's perfect. So I watched The Bear recently on Hulu. I believe it is now running on FX.
Mm-hmm.
It is a joint production between them. And it's a fantastic show. But in the finale, they make spaghetti. And it's his brother's recipe. And it's pertinent to the plot, but you don't need to know that for now. And about, let's say, 5 or 6 days ago, I found an article on BuzzFeed where some guy had decided to try by freeze framing that episode of The Bear on both the recipe card and the kitchen scenes where we see him prepping to try and recreate this sauce. And I followed this BuzzFeed guy's recipe and it was incredible.
Mm.
I may not ever buy store-bought tomato sauce again. Mm. Here's the kicker. It's going to take you 20 to 30 minutes to heat and boil water and boil your pasta anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So while that's going on, you can just set up another pan and make the tomato sauce, and doesn't cost you any time. It is a little heavy on like dirtying pans and utensils and things, and you'll have to do a lot of like dishes when you're done. But basically, you throw some olive oil, garlic, and basil in a frying pan and let it go for about 3 minutes, 4 minutes till the basil's wilting and it's crackling and sizzling. And then you just pull that off the heat and let that bitch ride. You just let it sit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to steep that olive oil with the garlic and the basil.
Mm-hmm.
Then you throw some butter in a Dutch oven or a big stock pot. Let that melt. And as soon as it melts, you take an onion and have it down the middle and place both halves down there. And basically, you're searing the onion to the bottom of this pan.
Ooh.
With the butter.
Ooh.
Then, after that's gone for a couple of minutes, you pour in your tomatoes. Now, the key here, if you want to be like The Bear, is to use the San Marzano tomatoes. They are only available from a very small region in Italy. They are oblong tomatoes, and they are apparently of great, great taste and flavor. They were the most expensive tomatoes I saw in the store, but that's what I bought anyway. And you mash all your tomatoes down, and you just let that go. You let it simmer for 20, 25 minutes. Cover it with a lid. You leave it alone. Then, when the pasta's done, you come back. You take your basil and your garlic and your oil and you throw that in a food processor and you blend that all up, leave it chunky. Then you pour that directly in the tomato sauce. Take out your onions and let it go for another 5 minutes and then throw your pasta in there, stir and eat. And I'm telling you, it is the best tomato sauce I've ever had outside of a restaurant.
You take out the onions.
The onions are only for flavor. Now, some people will then mince the onions or chop them up and put them in the sauce.
Mm-hmm.
We've already thought of a million ways to tweak this moving forward. But I was just following what this guy said to do. And apparently this is basically a combination of two classic tomato sauce preparations.
Mm-hmm.
The oil, garlic, basil infusion, and then the onion sauce where the onions are seared at the bottom of the tomatoes.
So, yeah.
But yeah, it was outrageous.
It's the kind of sauce that you could probably just eat out of the jar, right? Like, you don't even need to put it on spaghetti.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't even, it's not soupy or runny.
Mm.
It's more, because you used tomatoes that you mashed up, there's bits of tomato here and there. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a typical thin sauce. It's more chunky. And I don't even like tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Same. On their own. I pick them off of sandwiches. I get my tacos without tomatoes. But this thing was freaking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Vinny, don't put too many onions in the sauce.
Yeah.
Yes. There's, of course, a more famous tomato sauce on film in Goodfellas.
Yeah.
I did not shave the garlic with a razor blade because I'm not trying to hurt myself.
R.I.P. Paul Sorvino, by the way, too.
Yeah, he just died.
Yeah.
Anyway, hit me up on Twitter if you want more details on that. I will be happy to tell you about it. But I continue to just be winning every time I cook at home.
Mm-hmm.
Like Charlie Sheen in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend, if you've ever thought about it, taking the plunge and making your own homemade tomato sauce.
Mm-hmm. All right. I was in Toronto over the weekend and had enough time to go see Nope, Jordan Peele's new movie that came out over the past weekend. And I had been looking forward to this for quite some time since I saw the first trailers. And I don't remember when that was. It was probably sometime last year, late last year, or something like that. But Nope is one of these movies that's just constantly going to arrest your attention all the way through it. I do have some caveats here and there. And had a really interesting discussion with some buddies after this movie. Like, it seems like possibly there's a lot of ideas that don't get developed all the way. Like, there's the idea, but does it really incorporate into the movie in a meaningful way? That type of thing. For those of you unaware, Nope is a movie about some ranchers who do like some Hollywood stunt horse type stuff as a side gig, I guess. But it's when there's a mysterious thing that happens one day with Daniel Kaluuya and his father, played by Keith David. Keith David is on top of this one horse. They're having a conversation, and then something weird really happens, and Keith David dies in that scene. And I won't get into all the details of it, but it's not too long after, and you know, if you've seen the trailers, they start to believe that there is an alien presence in the area, and that they need to get actual proof of these aliens in there so that people will believe them. Because as we all know, if you try to take a shot of any kind of UFO, there's always an explanation for it, whether it be special effects or, you know, oh, it was a frisbee that somebody threw, some nonsense like that. So they want to really get on top of this. They hire a guy who's from some sort of Best Buy kind of store to come install all these cameras around the ranch. They really want help from one of the directors that they've run into, played by Michael Wincott, who a lot of people remember from The Crow. Michael Wincott plays this gruff director guy who really is game for almost anything, but he doesn't want to like help them out at all at first. And then you have Steven Yeun, who plays a former child actor who was on a show where there was a tragic incident involving a chimpanzee on set that he survived and he still sort of profits from to this day. And that's probably one of the main parts of this movie that a lot of people are going to point their finger to and go, what does the chimpanzee have to do with the rest of this movie? And among a lot of other things. However, you are going to be watching this movie. I wasn't bored one second, and that's the best thing you can say about a movie a lot of times. I wasn't bored one second. I think at the end of it, when you go in retrospect, you're going to start asking a lot of questions about what this meant and what that meant, and because that's the way Jordan Peele is. There is some... I've heard the name M. Night Shyamalan thrown around a lot about Jordan Peele lately. Does he have a lot of more style over substance sometimes? Is it one of those type of things? I don't know. This is a movie that I'm gonna have to watch again because there are a lot of things to process in this. Kiki Palmer is great in it. There was a lot of, though she was hit. She was a big story over Twitter over the weekend because someone was comparing her to Zendaya and all this stuff, and like, you know, and people had to come out of the woodwork to say, yeah, you know, Kiki Palmer's had a career for a really long time. I remember in Aquila and the Bee and all that stuff. And you know, this is a great performance for her. For people who didn't know who Kiki Palmer was, Daniel Kaluuya still does his usual great work. I can't get enough of that guy. Wish Keith David was in it more, though. Wish Keith David was, because I
always wish Keith
I love
David
Keith David so much. But this is a very fine movie, and it'll have us talking and discussing for a while. I think
he's a filmmaker. There are a handful of filmmakers that are in his situation where they've made a few movies that were really well regarded, and they have rabid fan bases. Like, I remember when the first trailer for Nope dropped. First of all, that was an incredible trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But the comments on that trailer were all, yes, Jordan Peele is the king. He can't fail. And I think we kind of set ourselves up to be disappointed.
All the time.
Begin, you know, like, worshiping the person as opposed to their art. And you see this across the board. Like, Taylor Swift fans are basically zombies. You got Snyder Bros. Everybody who becomes a super big fan these days of a creator becomes a super big fan of that creator.
Yeah.
And then we don't leave any room for them to be human or make a slight mistake. I'll be very curious to see it because he does have a lot of visual flair. And even if the deeper meaning doesn't come across, I'm confident he has a deeper meaning, at least that he's intending.
Sure.
Just because I've seen the man talk too much about making films. So yeah, I can't wait to see it. And hopefully it comes to on demand soon.
As a side note, there are a lot of things in here where we interpreted later that really fleshes out a lot of what's going on in this movie that, you know, and if we're completely wrong, who cares? It really enhanced the experience to think about the movie in a certain way. Anyway, there's a lot to be had from this movie. I know I started off kind of negative on it, but overall I really like this. So
no, I definitely sense that you are recommending it. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff. Make sure those people who muted can unmute now in the chat. There's a couple people who just didn't want to hear anything about this movie because they're waiting to see it.
Yep.
I think it's time for this week's big recommend.
The big recommend.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
Brian De Palma's 1981 movie Blowout, starring John Travolta, Nancy Allen. It is a movie that combines some of the elements of Michelangelo Antonioni. Try to say that fast. Antonioni's Blow Up and Francis Ford Coppola's The Conversation. In the fact that someone has a recorded incident of some sort that they get obsessed over, and it's usually a murder or an attempted murder or something of that sort. But it starts off with this really campy horror movie that is not the movie that you're about to watch. It's sort of like playing on the audience's expectations of De Palma himself. It's a Steadicam shot of this killer that's stalking this sorority, where the most outrageous things are happening in front of open windows. Looking at an interview later from De Palma later, he said they were just laughing their asses off all the way through this opening because they kept trying to top like how much ridiculousness is going on in this one shot. The Steadicam shot is done by the inventor of Steadicam, by the way, Garrett Brown, who was just off The Shining when he did this shot at the opening scene. We find out that this is a movie that's being directed by some like independent, you know, schlocky director guy. And he has John Travolta as his sound man. And the very ending of this is a woman screaming in the shower, and it's probably the worst scream you can ever hear in a horror movie. It is absolutely the worst possible scream. It's like a sound that's not even blood curdling at all. It's his job to like, the director and him get into sort of a fight, like a little fight where it's like, I'm hearing the same sound effects I've heard in the last four movies. Why don't you go out and get me something real while I try to find somebody to dub over this scream and everything, which is apparently, according to Palma, something that actually happened with him and his sound guy when he was doing Dressed to Kill, the movie just before this. A conversation he had with his sound man saying, I've heard the same wind rustling through the leaves sound on the last four movies. So we see Travolta getting prepared for this. And I love this opening split screen with De Palma De Palma's known for these split screens at this point. This is a trademark thing. I love this one because it shows Travolta doing all of his stuff, like, you know, getting stuff on reels and preparing for this sound thing that he's going to do. Meanwhile, there's this news story that you need to pay attention to. And there's this Liberty Day holiday coming up, and there's an election coming up and all this stuff. The way he does this, it marries the two things already in the story. That's what I love about it so much. And it typically, this would be, you know, we see this in modern films where like a random TV just happens to be on in a bar or something like that, and it tells the whole story. It's so stupid. This one is basically just saying, here, pay attention to this. This is going to be very important. So he goes out and he's doing all these nature sounds. He picks up a couple who are about to make out on a bridge. He picks up a frog, an owl, all these different little things. And then he hears this sound that pegs his sound meter. And it's this car that has blown out its tire and crashes over the bridge into the water. And he goes down and saves Nancy Allen, but a politician shown in that beginning newsreel didn't make it. And so he has actual sound recording of what happened, and he believes the tire got shot out. And so the rest of this movie is him trying to prove that tire got shot out, and he's trying to find all the information he can. Of course, the powers that be want to keep it very tight-lipped during the entire movie. They don't want to know what happened, because Nancy Allen being in his car means that he was cheating on his wife, and that's going to be that would they just want to protect the family and everything. Meanwhile, there's also a guy hired by the opposition, played by John Lithgow, who is fucking awesome in this movie.
Yeah, he is.
There is a scene with John Lithgow where he is doing a sort of a panicked murderer 911 call with the most stoic face you will ever see someone doing. A lot of times you'll see somebody when they're really in character or whatever, they have to go through all the motions and they have to be that person or whatever. Lithgow's got two things going on at once. He's following this one guy, and he's following Travolta. And he's also trying to, he's trying to get a serial murderer thing going on so that he can kill Nancy Allen later and make it look like it's part of that. So he's on the phone. He's just like sitting there like, oh my God, I killed somebody. And he's just got this face on him the whole time. I killed somebody. And it was next to that, that place where they're building something over there and all that. And Lithgow's great in this.
Yeah,
anyway, Blowout is just one of those movies. It's De Palma as fuck. That is a tremendous compliment. It is an absolutely fun mystery. And it goes down it winds up in a place where you don't really expect it to by the end.
Mm-mm.
So
I wrote, what a gut punch this movie is.
Yeah.
Like, I think any other filmmaker, 99% of other filmmakers would have ended this movie differently.
Mm-hmm.
And even this movie itself sort of suggests this is going to end well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or at least wants you to believe that it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love how that climax is, like you were talking about the television with the Liberty thing and the politicians. Like they earn that climax by foreshadowing that shit all throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The constantly signs about the Liberty event that you see in passing, people talking about it on the radio, and it just feels really earned, as opposed to, oh, there's suddenly fireworks here. Like, it makes perfect sense.
Right.
And I love the right before that, where he's got her in a wire and he's nearby and he realizes this is not the guy. She's mm-hmm. meeting the wrong guy. Mm-hmm. She's in danger. And he has to try and chase them with audio. Like, he can hear what's going on. He even crashes his car and passes out and then wakes back up and plugs the earpiece back in and, mm-hmm. and figures out where they are
yeah.
and goes to save her. It's just so clever. And I love that it started with a real conversation about audio on a movie that he was making.
Mm-hmm.
And that little nugget just stayed with him all the way through. I thought Lithgow was probably the standout for me. Travolta's really good. And I just read this morning, when I was prepping, that he apparently suffered from insomnia the entire shoot.
Really?
And that's part of why his character gives such a moody, kind of out of it kind of a performance, is because he was really exhausted the entire shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like when you say this is De Palma as fuck, this is almost, if you want to say, what does De Palma's movies look like? What are De Palma's things? Just show them this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's a three-time circle 360 pan in Travolta's office as he's realizing all of his tapes have been erased. That's just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I like to rave about the 360 shot in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes with the tank, and that's mm-hmm. an incredible shot. But that's an action 360 shot.
Mm-hmm.
The one in Blowout is an anxiety-inducing 360 shot that's trying to put you in his state of mind as he starts to spiral out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I don't know, in hindsight, it feels so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
These techniques that he uses, the split screens are all intentional. There's nothing wasted there. There's even the split screen where he's like, the hitman is holding a picture of Nancy Allen, and in the background on the other side of the screen is the escalator.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sees a woman coming down that kind of looks like her, and it's all so very intentional to put you in both spots at once. I feel like you could accidentally watch this movie casually and miss all of the artistry that's going
absolutely.
on.
Absolutely. And that's one thing that he likes doing. He does the split screen. He also does the split diopter, where you have everything in focus in the foreground and the background. One of the things, if you ever hear De Palma talk about his movies, he's always very, like, I've always thought he might like us in some ways, because he nitpicks a lot of like things that movies do that he hates.
Mm.
But the split diopter thing is a really cool thing that he uses, that extreme focus in the front and the back. That scene that you're talking about has the split diopter in it.
Yeah.
There's something about the way he shoots those. It's just engaging. And that shot with the, he talked about that with the, in a Noah Baumbach interview, he talked about that rotating camera or whatever. And he's like, you know, there's a lot of things, just like any kind of one shot that you do, where people have to hit their cues just right. You know, I'm basically above the scene telling people to go where they need to go at the appropriate time. So, you know, like when the camera goes over here, Travolta's coming over and looking at these tapes or whatever. And then it comes back around and, oh, he needs to do something over here. And then it comes back around and then the woman says the cops are on the phone and all that. So he's like, you know, those are the things that can really like stress you out as a director, but they're so satisfying when they work out everything. This is just one of those. It's just a joy all the way through. Nancy Allen, apparently, I guess, got panned a bit for her performance in this because she's playing that sort of that babe in the woods or whatever. Type of role in her voice or whatever. And she said in an interview that she wanted to do like a Pennsylvania accent, but De Palma directed her to do something that's like a couple of movies that he had seen or whatever. So she ended up doing it. I think it's fine. I think it works absolutely perfectly for this movie because she's us in a lot of ways. In this, when she's asking all these questions about what he does and he has to explain it, it's sort of like for you if you don't know all these different things. And there's, I mean, a lot of like real like technical sound nerd type stuff going on in this, especially when he tries to sync up the sound with Dennis Franz's pictures that he cuts out of that magazine and he turns into that film. You know, he's got to sync up his own audio with that film that he has made. And he he has to like write on the sound, like, okay, this is where I hear the gunshot. And then he comes back and he forwards through with the film, finds the place where the splash happens, and he writes a big S on the thing. And he's always like toggling it back and forth. This is stuff that you don't do in the digital age, right? You just, you know, this is a completely different thing. And I loved seeing that old school mentality on this. So,
yeah, I feel like I love everything he does with the sound. Like when he's re-listening to his audio, he holds the pencil and moves it and points it exactly the way he did the mic when he was out recording it that first night. Mm-hmm. I just feel so much intentional about this movie. Like even even the story he tells, I guess it is a flashback about the undercover cop who the mic wire battery, because the cop is sweating, it starts burning him. And Travolta decides to ruin the mission by running in to save him, and he's fucking dead. Mm-hmm. But that is to set up not only Travolta's obsession with getting it right this time, mm-hmm. but him knowing how to wire her up for the climax when he's going to send her to meet the newsman. It's just, it's seamless. It's almost Christopher Nolan-esque in how it's like plotted and planned before they even shot a thing.
It's interesting to me too. That scene obviously is a big foreshadow for what happens later. And like, but there's at least three images of hanging imagery in this movie. And I'm wondering like what that's all about, really. Like that scene with that guy that ends up in a hanging, the second woman that Lithgow kills has a hanging. And then there's the scene where Travolta crashes into that like American Revolution display, and there's a guy hanging in there. And I'm wondering if these are all just like, I don't know. The two deaths aren't symbolic in any way. They're just deaths. Like, but that third one could just mean that this is another one's on the way possibly. I don't know, but I didn't know what the hanging imagery was all about in this. It was kind of interesting that he did that a lot in this.
I do think, as somebody who would really love to listen to an owl on a regular basis, he lucked the fuck out just going to a park and having a frog and an owl and a couple making out. Like, he hit the Foley lottery with that.
He really did. You know, and of course that leads us to, you know, the ending of that movie, ending of this movie, you know, I guess if there are people who are on this chat or whatever, who don't want to know how this movie ends, you might want to mute me now, but, you know, it doesn't end happily at all. It ends happily for the director of the movie, the schlocky movie. You know, Travolta does find where Lithgow is strangling Nancy Allen in this. And he gets to him, he kills him, but he's too late. And leading to that great shot with the fireworks in the background and everything, reminiscent later of that Brokeback Mountain shot where Heath Ledger beats those two guys up at the 4th of July thing. There's that shot, and then very cynically at the very end of this movie, he has decided to use Nancy Allen's scream in the movie, which is a holy shit moment. It's really fucked up. it sort of makes you wonder what this character is that you've been following. He's our hero, but man, he's not above doing this, you know?
I chose to interpret it. And I don't think it sat very well with me, which is why I chose to interpret it my own way.
Mm-hmm.
That he just acknowledged we're never going to get an authentic scream unless we get it from somebody who's being murdered.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the most authentic scream we're ever going to have. Shame right. that I knew this girl and wanted to date her, but that's probably too rosy. I think he's probably darker on the inside than I want to believe.
Yeah, and from what I understand, the original script, before they even knew there was going to be a Travolta in this, that he was a darker kind of character. And like Nancy Allen said something, because she was married to Brian De Palma during this time. It was like a 4-year period where they were married. She knew this script before anybody was attached to it, and she thought it was somebody like James Woods or somebody like that would have been in this in this role. So a little bit darker. And you got to think also, this is an interesting turn for Travolta, because at the time, you know, he was known for Welcome Back, Kotter. He was in Carrie. Then he blew up with all the Saturday Night Fever stuff and Grease and all that. That blew up. And then he kind of like, this is sort of a step down from where his star was at the time. But it turns out to be one of his best movies, I think. I don't know very many that are close to this, actually, other than Pulp Fiction, maybe. It was supposed to be darker. I think it was a little less big budgeted type of movie until he got on board. But apparently people love working with Travolta. It's not like he went in and just changed everything or anything. I think it was just the fact that he got cast, you know, is what sort of changed some of the things. So anyway, but yeah, I think that ending is as dark as it gets. You don't think about this when you don't think about this in movies from the '80s, right? This is still kind of a throwback to the '70s, even though we're just a couple years removed from it at that point. You know, this is not what we would see in the '80s. Eighties started getting a little bit more sunny. They were like, I'm tired of all these endings where, like, you know, Travis Bickle sees stuff in the rearview mirror and all that type of stuff. Well, we were seeing in the '70s a lot. So, anyway, this is, of course, our big recommend. I hope all of you got to see this. If not, go out and see it. It's good. And the Criterion has a great disc for it too.
And it's free on Tubi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So are we ready for the double feature?
I think we're ready for the double feature.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
Now, as soon as you said blowout last week, my brain went conversation. But then you mentioned the conversation.
Right, and I even said I don't want to take out your double feature right away.
But that made me realize that the conversation is too on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
It's too perfect a pick.
Mm-hmm.
So I threw that one out. I could very easily just give you another De Palma from this era, like Body Double or Dressed to Kill.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they would be incredible double features.
Definitely.
I'm not going to do that either. I saw somebody mention this, and I lingered for a little bit on Enemy of the State.
Ooh.
But I do want to keep my double features, for the most part, great movies when I can. And I love Enemy of the State. I like it more than you do, I promise. But mm-hmm. it's not a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it has very similar... There's a piece of media that proves something corrupt a government person did. But instead of somebody trying to prove it, it just ends up being Will Smith on the run. So I threw that one out. I thought about Zodiac. Because the parallel here would be a normal human getting obsessed with solving a crime.
Yeah.
I threw that one out. I'm going to give you one more I threw out, and then I'm going to give you the real thing. I really thought about going with Arlington Road.
Yeah, Arlington Road, yeah.
And similarly, I'm going to go with Arlington Road.
All right.
I'm changing my mind. I'm going with Arlington Road.
Okay.
You have somebody who suspects something, can't prove it, nobody believes him, and then it ends with a punch to the gut because the good guy does not win.
Right.
And Arlington Road is great, and it's underseen. I will now tell you what I was going to do originally was Rear Window.
Yeah.
But Rear Window will probably be a main recommend at some point on this show anyway, because you and I both love it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to boost Arlington Road. I would do Blowout, Arlington Road.
Yeah.
Everyday heroes who don't win.
I'm down with that. And also, just as an aside, you know, there are obvious connections to the Zapruder film in this, like JFK conspiracy type stuff is all rampant through this. JFK would obviously be a decent sort of double feature for this, but I like that Arlington Road thing a lot. This type of stuff is fun, man. When I think conspiracies are fun in movies, I don't think they're fun in real life. That's a good one. I haven't seen Arlington Road, I don't think, since it came out, but I remember a lot about it.
Yeah, and it's, you just, I don't think the first time through you see that ending coming at all.
No, no, you do not.
I like evil Tim Robbins. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever he turns heel, it's just, I always enjoy his performance.
Mm-hmm. Like in Shawshank?
All right. Shawshank? Well, yeah. Okay, next week's big recommend. Here's your homework, everybody. Mm-hmm. Picked by me, Jeremy. It's The Spanish Prisoner. This is a David Mamet film starring Steve Martin and Campbell Scott. Steve Martin is that guy in Only Murders in the Building for all of you young kids out there.
Campbell Scott is that dude who was Spidey's father in the other Spider-Man movie.
Yes, exactly. In the Andrew Garfield movie.
Yes.
The Spanish Prisoner, just as a brief layout, it's David Mamet, directed and written. This is the guy who made Glengarry Glen Ross. He's a great writer. I love this movie. It's pretty well rated. I think it's like a 7 on IMDb and an 89 on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Campbell Scott plays a guy who works for a big corporation, and Campbell Scott has invented a process. Mm-hmm. And this process is going to make the company billions of dollars.
MacGuffin as fuck.
Yes, it is MacGuffin as fuck. He doesn't even try. He almost making fun of you for not knowing what the process is.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the movie is basically kind of like a spy movie without government agencies really being the spies. Mm-hmm. And Campbell Scott tries to figure out, he goes to this company retreat. He runs into Steve Martin. Steve Martin is this enigmatic, rich, charming guy. And they decide, he gives him a book to give to his sister. And basically, the rest of the movie is him trying to figure out what's up with Steve Martin and who can he trust. And I'm not going to tell you any more about it. It is free on Prime and it is free on Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a week if you're alive. Well, no, if you're, whether you're listening now or watching live streaming, you have a week to watch The Spanish Prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you enjoy it. I can't wait to talk about it.
It's funny, man. I think it was just this past weekend I was thinking, there's going to be a point where one of us does The Spanish Prisoner. and sure enough, it was this week. So, I will be glad to revisit this. This is a movie that you recommended to me a long time ago, and you gave me the DVD for it. I have probably seen this movie now 6 or 7 times, so I'm looking forward to seeing it again, for sure.
Yeah, they talk really funny in this movie, especially Rebecca Pidgeon.
Yes.
Talk much like they did in the 30s.
Yeah.
And it seems it's very intentional.
And it also seems like only the people who are in the movie are ever in the movie. Like, there's never anybody else that it's around. It's very spare. Like, there's no extras or anything at least for a while. There's not any extras.
Right.
So, like, it just feels like I think that had to have been somewhat intentional, because it makes you have this isolation, gives you this isolation feel. So.
Sure. Yeah.
Looking forward to that for sure.
All right, so now let's get to a couple questions before say bon voyage.
Let's do it.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I'm listening.
Who is your favorite key grip? Just kidding. Real question is about directors. Oh, this is in line with what I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of new gen directors out there right now with 2 to 5 recent films under their belt, which have all been good or great. I must have subconsciously remembered this question when I was talking earlier. Hmm. Who is your bet, if they were stocks, on who would end up being a Spielberg or Scorsese of the bunch? And the examples are Jordan Peele, Ryan Coogler, Robert Eggers, Lanthimos, Chazelle, Barry Jenkins, or pick your own.
Mm-hmm.
So who of these up-and-comers who have been kicking ass earlier in their career do we think has the longevity?
Yeah, there was a good list there, and I think I missed the part about being the next Spielberg or Scorsese, but like... I just thought it was somebody who is my favorite out of that group, or someone who was
that's fair.
So I ended up with Taika Waititi, even though I haven't seen Love and Thunder yet or whatever. But most of the things that I've seen Taika Waititi do so far has been great. Have been right up my alley on almost everything. Jojo Rabbit was great. I love Thor Ragnarok, and I love that movie Hunt for the Wilder People that he did a few years ago. What We Do in the Shadows is fun. I don't know if we've, other than Jojo Rabbit and these other couple of like smaller movies he's done, I don't know if we've seen a Spielberg or Scorsese coming out of that, but we are seeing a new exciting filmmaker, even though he's got a lot of credits under his belt at this point. I'm at this point, I'm intrigued with anything that I see his name on at this point.
Yeah. And that's a good way to put it too. I chose Ryan Coogler out of this list because I was too lazy to go do research for other people. And I've seen 4 Ryan Coogler movies, Creed, Creed 2, Fruitvale Station, and Black Panther. And they were all A's, A pluses.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of confidence in this guy. And I don't know if you guys have seen the Black Panther Wakanda Forever trailer. That is one of the most confident looking films I've ever seen. I don't know if it's going to be good, but I believe it is exactly what Ryan Coogler wanted to make. That that trailer screams, I know who I am. Mm-hmm. Listen up.
Yeah.
And I'm geeked about that movie. But interesting question, and I thank you for it. Let's move on to another.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite made-for-kids, great-for-adults movie?
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Mm-hmm. I think both Paddingtons fit under this.
Yes, they do.
The first Paddington is good, and the second Paddington is even better. I think that's how that goes. Paddington 2 is amazing. But those movies too, like, it took years after Paddington came out for anyone to tell me that this is really, really good. You should watch this. I'm like, really? This movie? Are you serious? Doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, now I see what they're saying. These movies, I mean, they really are like special that way, right? Like, kids could really enjoy it, but adults can really sink their teeth into them too. So
I will correct myself before I give an answer. Coogler did not direct Creed 2. Thank you in the live chat.
Yeah, he was only a producer on it, but
he wrote it and produced it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My apologies to the director of Creed 2. Who I'm looking it up now. is Stephen Caple Jr. And, of course, Michael B. Jordan is directing Creed III.
Yep.
In his directorial debut. I choose Finding Nemo only because I have long said Finding Nemo is a perfect movie. There was a time in my life, this is probably why I feel this way, there was a time in my life where I didn't have cable and I only had a few DVDs, and Finding Nemo was one of them, and I watched it frequently, and I just can't find a flaw, man. I can't find any issues with it at all. It's just beat for beat, it's exactly what it needs to be. And I love Pixar. Pixar has always been great at making movies that kids enjoy, but adults enjoy as well. But I'll choose Finding Nemo. Let's do one more.
Okay.
I think we need one more.
Yep.
If money was no object, what movie car would you most like to own? I think we've done, like, what's your favorite movie car before, but this one is basically a little different, asking us if we were Elon Musk rich, which movie car would we buy?
I love these Aston Martins and the old Bond movies, man. I want one of those Aston Martins that he drives around. I want that Aston Martin here in 2022. I want all of those Aston Martins he drives. Those are such cool cars. They're so cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, so yeah, I would love to have any one of those. Any version.
I have a real answer and a joke answer. The Batmobile from the Batman has instantly shot to near the top of my list of movie cars because it's fucking badass. It tears through a huge concrete cylinder on the interstate like it's made of paper.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like an angry animal when it turns on. I want that car. But I also wrote John Voight's Chrysler the Baron from Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
John Voight the dentist, not John Voight the actor.
Right. Yes.
All right, everybody. I think that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks to everybody. Keaton's Batmobile. I forgot to read answers here. Keaton's Batmobile is a good answer. Does the time machine count? Mm-hmm. Yes, that's not a car. You can't buy that. That's a time machine. Mustang from Gone in 60 Seconds. That's good. That's
good. Going on the good kids movies for adults. So we had Toy Story. We had Wall-E. We had Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Animal Crackers came up. Lego Movie. Nice. Spider-Verse. Lego Batman. Yeah, there's a lot of good ones. Ratatouille. Iron Giant, of course. Yeah, you can't go wrong with any of those. So
The Mist.
Yes, The Mist. Fine family fun.
Slab. Thank you everybody in the chat. We really appreciate you and your camaraderie and your support, and we hope to see you next week. Remember, your homework is The Spanish Prisoner. It's free on Prime and Peacock.
Yeah. All right, guys, we'll see you. Bye. Part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
I'm good. I just have to remember to pay attention where I plug my headphones in. So I spent about an hour troubleshooting everything except that, only to find I had plugged my headphones into output number 2, which is controlled by a completely separate knob for volume. And now I know not to make that particular mistake. So no, I should be good.
Yeah.
I should be good. I see The Gray Man is getting a sequel and a spinoff.
Really?
Now I
must be doing well for those guys.
Must be. And, you know, the reviews are pretty middling, but that doesn't matter when it comes to sequels.
No.
But I saw an interview with the Russos like a month or two ago. Hinted that they had hopes that this would be a franchise with like a John Wick kind of thing that could build and have other characters and whatnot. Every review I've read makes it sound like a watered down version of Jason Bourne, Mission Impossible, Bond, 00, Transformers. I don't know. Not Transformers, but I'll watch it eventually.
Yeah,
those guys.
I don't know. I just got a lot of, it was funny that you said that yesterday about them. Like, I don't know if they're good outside the Marvel universe and everything. And
yeah,
I was thinking that same thing actually, a few days ago. I was like, what separates them as directors? And then, you know, I haven't seen that 172 Bridges movie that came out a few years ago, whatever that movie was called.
I've seen that movie.
And
it was pretty bland. I've seen most of Cherry and it was pretty bland.
Yeah. It seems like all the movies that they've done outside of it have been, whatever. So, yeah.
I mean, they, to be clear, they seem like awesome people. Mm-hmm. It's just the internet and social media where you can just walk right up onto a celebrity's doorstep has made it so that criticizing a movie or a director gets twisted
mm-hmm.
now to where people assume you're criticizing them as individuals, mm-hmm. as people.
No.
Which is not the case at all. They made the highest grossing movie of all time until Avatar decided to be a dick.
Yeah, yeah.
And I haven't. I'm just saying,
well, and then,
as a film fan looking at the art form itself, I'm not sure they work all that well outside of that Marvel system.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, I don't think this would be in the main podcast, but I was watching Brian De Palma talk about movies in there's a Noah Baumbach interview that's in the Criterion Blowout. Which I guess that interview led to Noah Baumbach doing a whole De Palma documentary a few years later. But I feel like De Palma would be a fan of CinemaSins in a way. Maybe not all the way. Maybe not all the way. But he's like talking about how the beginning of this movie, he's like, you know, what is it a lot of these movies do? You know, they have a helicopter shot over Manhattan, and it's like, ooh, are we in New York right now? Ooh, nice. or they have a shot, like a worthless shot of a car driving over the opening credits or something like that. And he goes, who cares about that? Nobody cares about that. That's worthless. That's a waste of time. And awesome. I'm sitting there thinking, God, that's exactly how we would describe it. You know, and getting back, and the other thing about De Palma was that I've seen a whole video about this where when he did Bonfire of the Vanities, he was like, I'm never going to have one of those stock footage shots of a plane arriving at an airport. Nobody can do that well at all. Like it's worthless to me. And apparently one of his assistant directors said, challenge accepted, and made this full-on like magic hour plane landing thing that cost like $250,000 or some shit that they put in the movie. And there's a whole video about how that shot right there was made.
That's awesome.
Really interesting type of stuff, how De Palma thinks about things. But anyway,
we're gonna get, I mean, unless tragedy strikes, we're gonna get at least one more Francis Ford Coppola. Mm-hmm. We're going to get at least one more Brian De Palma. And we're going to get at least one more John McTiernan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very excited about that.
Be now, interesting to see if McTiernan still has it. I mean, I don't think he's done anything in a while.
No, he had that stint in jail. And then,
mm-hmm.
But it's he and Coppola both, Coppola.
It's Coppola.
I'll never get it right.
It's Coppola.
They have like passion projects that they've been chewing on for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Coppola's already casting.
Yeah, I saw that video with him talking about that movie.
Yeah. But I'll be curious to see, because, you know, you and I talk about this a lot, how movie making has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't make movies today like they did when De Palma and McTiernan were in their heyday.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope is that these guys would, you know, show them how it's done and give us some classic McTiernan angles and some De Palma pans.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what will audiences respond to that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's not the same world anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they would. They just, you know, they just probably not going to pick it up in these older movies. They, you know, they're used to ever all the you know, new generations used to the way movies have been made the last 25 to 30 years.
Yeah.
And they're not going to go back usually, because I'm already in that. We both acknowledge our oldness.
Yes.
There are people who I run into constantly who are like, you know, you'll name a movie that you know is pretty famous, and they're like, what's that?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, you don't know about this. Or they'll have seen something, and they're like, oh, I didn't think that was very good. And I'm like, are you kidding? Are you kidding me? That's not
I will never forget. This was like back when CinemaSins first started, so probably like 2013. I was having a conversation with my buddy's then 14-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me he didn't like The Matrix, but he loved the two sequels.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of my first like light bulb moments where I went, wow, like every generation sees art through its own lens.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I just think that's fascinating, because I remember telling him to his face, you might be the only person on earth who believes that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the two sequels are awesome and the first one's not good.
Oh yeah.
But he's probably not. There's probably a lot of people his generation that think that. Think, oh, the first Matrix is slow and boring.
Hollywood 27, I think it was my second stint there, who was like, I want to make the kind of movies Michael Bay makes. You know, he's my hero. And I'm like, oh, you didn't say that ironically at all.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.